Show yourself. No. No, stay back. Please, stop this. No. Please, my son, forgive me. Forgive me. Please. The Lost Son, starring Bonnie Bogovich, Carter Callahan, Ethan Gough, and Josiah Robinson. Written and directed by Cole Burgett. Episode 1, The Letter.
The year was 1899. Charles and I had only just become engaged to be married. I had my license to practice medicine and was operating from my flat in New York City the day the letter came.
Dr. Emily, am I going to die?
Good heavens, Lydia. It's only a cough.
No, Miss Lydia. I do not think it likely. But I think it likely you might get out of your studies for another day or so.
As if she needs an excuse to that end, running around all day with those dime stories and penny dreadfuls her father insists on reading.
Let me see if I have something for that cough.
She spends more time filling her head with morbidities and other strange fantasies than she does in her studies. If she had any wits at all, she would follow in your stead, Dr. Goodwin. The times are changing. You are a true modern woman. Practicing medicine, a sophisticate.
Yes, well, I would not be so quick to dismiss those dime stories, Mrs. Braithwaite. I was once enchanted by them myself. Ah, here we are. Give her a spoonful a day until it's gone. That should clear up her cough with relative quickness. She'll be back to her studies in no time at all.
We are ever in your debt, Dr. Goodwin.
Oh, nonsense. I'm always happy to see my favorite patient. Just remember, Miss Lydia, we must all grow up sooner or later. Just not too quickly.
What do we say, Lydia?
Thank you, Dr. Emily.
You're very welcome.
Excuse me.
Well, I do beg your pardon.
Good day, Mr. Danforth. We were just leaving.
In that case, good day, Mrs. Braithwaite. And Lydia.
Come along, Lydia.
Bye, Dr. Emily.
Goodbye, Miss Lydia.
Horrid woman, that one. I can only imagine what she's like in the confines of her own home.
Pretense, Mr. Danforth. It's all these people know.
How's that for pretense?
You'll have to try harder than that.
Why are you not changed? We're going to be late.
Oh, Charles. I have no desire to spend my evening feigning interest in these people. And I cannot imagine you desire to do so either. This dinner party will be nothing but a room full of Mrs. Braithwaite's.
Yes, well, if you intend to become Mrs. Danforth instead of remaining Ms. Goodwin the rest of your life, won't you at least make an effort to get along with your future neighbors?
Oh, I get along with them fine enough. I write their prescriptions, and I do not ask any more questions than necessary to do just that.
Please, Emily. This evening is very important to me.
To your wealth and status, you mean?
Do you not come from the same stock?
You mean, why do I not feel the need to flaunt it?
Damn it, woman! Would you please just come along? We will leave early, I promise. We need only make an appearance, but an appearance must be made.
Very well, Mr. Danforth. I will go and change.
Thank you. Oh, yes, I nearly forgot. Here, this came for you in the post.
Oh?
I found it outside your door on my way in. A letter from a secret admirer? An old flame, perhaps?
That was Charles's sense of humor. But he had no idea the irony lacing his words. I recognized the handwriting the moment I saw the letter. and I could hear Andrew's voice as my eyes raced across the page.
My dearest Emily, I pray this letter finds you well. It has been some time since last we spoke, and I wish it under better circumstances that I write you now. However, I believe the day that I have long feared is at hand, and I know not where else to turn in this dark hour. Please, come to Ballard Hall at your earliest convenience. If inconvenient, I beg you to come anyway. If not for the sake of the memories residing here, then let it be for the sake of the bond once shared. Ever your friend, Andrew.
Emily? My dear, is something wrong?
I did not know where to begin. What could I say to Charles that would help him understand why I went and began packing my bags right then? There was too much history to explain away. Too much hurt and regret. At least that's what I told myself at the time. When I came down the stairs with my things, he was standing at the door, Andrew's letter in his hands.
Emily, please, I do not understand.
It will only be for a few days, Charles.
Why are you going back there?
Because he asked.
But
Andrew is from an old life long gone, Charles.
And that is why I do not understand why you are going.
Had I been honest with myself then, I would have admitted that I did not understand my decision either. But I was still young.
Don't worry, I will write you upon my return.
Up until the moment I held that letter in my hands, I had not known whether I would ever hear from Andrew Ballard again. In my mind, he was gone. Not forgotten, but part of another life. One I thought I'd left behind. The past has a way of returning, an echo that carries down the corridors of time. I know that now. Ballard Hall, an old house rising up against the skyline like a castle from the Dark Ages, a remnant from a time of superstition. And the sword.
You sure you want me to drop you off here, miss? Town's not too far along the trail, just through that force up there.
Oh, yeah, this is fine, thank you.
You're a brave lady, miss, hanging around this old place with all that's been going on around here.
I'm sorry, I don't take your meaning.
You mean you haven't heard?
Heard? Heard what?
Yeah. Look, last chance, lady. You going to town or you staying here?
I told you I'm fine here.
Your funeral.
I stood there, looking at the old place. When I first left for New York, I could sometimes see that place in my dreams. Once, Ballard Hall had been a majestic home, the sign of a great and powerful family. Now, vines crept up its high walls, practically strangling it. Even in the cold light of day, the place looked positively dead.
Andrew? Mr. Ballard? Hello?
Not a light burned in the place. I suppose it was curiosity that pulled me further into the darkness. I entered that regal sitting room. Every stitch of old, hand-carved furniture was covered in dust, but all the pieces were arranged just as I remembered them to be. Even those family portraits remained on the walls. There was the mother, a woman I had never met. Her skin was pale and sickly, but her eyes were bright and kind. The father was there as well. This one I had met. A stern man. Even in his picture, his face was cruel. And then, hanging between them, the portrait of their son. A handsome young man with his mother's eyes and his father's disposition.
Is it as you remember?
I suppose he should have startled me. He emerged in silence, as if from the very shadows of the room. But perhaps I had expected it.
More or less. It is good to see you, Andrew.
And you. To be honest, I'm surprised you came.
Why would I not?
Shall we take a walk?
Lead on.
So, you practice medicine? In New York, no less.
I do. You sound surprised.
Not at all, actually. I read in the paper some years back about you saving the lives of those people on board that train. The one that fell into the Hudson.
You have papers all the way out here now, do you?
Yes, well, you might say we have evolved to some higher form of intelligence.
Done some reading of your own, have you? Eventually, we passed the mausoleum that housed his mother, the woman I had never met. I noticed as we walked that his eyes lingered there. And how is your father keeping?
He's there.
The mausoleum?
Yes. He's dead.
Andrew, I'm so sorry. How long?
3 weeks now.
Three? I studied his face. To anyone else, it might have seemed cold, emotionless. But not to me. I knew all too well the pain and the rage that simmered behind those tired eyes. So recent. How?
I first noticed the change in his demeanor about 3 months ago. He became darker, more melancholic than usual. He would disappear from the house for hours. I never learned where he went. By the second month, he had stopped sleeping. I often found him wandering the house in the late hours of the night, speaking to the walls. The third month, he would spend his days ranting and raving like a madman. He stopped talking to me almost entirely the week before he died. Only a few words here or there. And late one evening, he said he would explain everything soon. That night, he disappeared. 2 days later, his body was found out by the old Windsor Mill. He had been killed.
Killed? As in murdered?
Or killed by an animal. His body was... well, there was little left.
Oh, Andrew, that's awful.
Yes, well, I'm afraid it's only the beginning.
The beginning? The beginning of what?
The truth is, my father's death is just the most recent chapter in this disturbing saga.
You mean there have been others?
Yes. In the neighboring villages and the countryside.
Does anyone have any idea what kind of animal would do such a thing?
There are rumors, of course, from the locals. But they are far more superstitious in their conclusions. I received word after my father's death that the Pinkertons were sending an agent to investigate. Their man was due to arrive some days ago, but no one has seen him. I suppose the man leading the investigation now is Arthur.
Arthur? He's still here? After all this time?
Oh, yes, he's still here. You two would be kindred spirits. He's a doctor as well.
Really? Why, I never would have thought Arthur Darrow's the bookish type. Too adventuresome in spirit.
People change, I guess. He serves as the coroner for the village here and several of the surrounding towns. He's been investigating these deaths.
Well, I do hope he finds whomever or whatever is responsible. And what of you, Andrew?
What of me?
You're still here, too.
I am. Carrying on the family legacy, as was expected of me.
Legacy? Yet I do not detect the presence of a ring on your finger, other than...
this old thing?
It looks like some kind of signet ring.
Yes. It was my father's.
Is that a... it looks like some kind of wolf?
Yes, it's a unique design. I never saw my father wearing it, but it supposedly belonged to his father and his father before him. I am not certain how many generations back it goes. He gave me this ring just before he died. Strange. As if he knew he was going to his death.
But no trace of a wedding band.
A wedding band? Oh, no, no. Since we parted ways,
Well, I suppose I simply never went looking. And you?
What of me?
Do you have someone? A part of me wondered if I had addressed the letter to the correct name.
I do, but I am still Miss Emily Goodwin, for the time being.
Is he a good man?
He is. He reminds me of my father in some ways. Kind and gentle. But he is, most unfortunately, a man.
I believe I am offended.
Oh, you know what I mean.
Do I?
Competitive in spirit and foul-mouthed when he's angry. A socialite. He's well-to-do, but he lacks my father's disdain for the money and the entitlement.
And what of your father? Hmm? How fares he these days?
Oh, I'm afraid he passed some years ago. It was quiet, peaceful, though somewhat unexpected. He simply drifted away in his sleep, next to my mother.
I am very sorry to hear that. I always liked your father.
And he, you.
Your mother?
She survived a year without him, then came down with consumption. I was away from home at the time of her passing.
It seems we all become orphans, sooner or later.
Indeed, it does. We had been walking and talking aimlessly, yet we ended up in a familiar place, on the cliffs overlooking the black waters of a lake.
I never tire of this view. Do you remember coming here together all those years ago?
Of course I do.
This was our place. We could come here to get away from the world. Away from my father.
Andrew, why am I here?
Do you not wish to be?
I came, did I not? But in your letter, you sounded desperate. Fearful, even. What is this dark thing you have long feared? Your father's death? Andrew, please, talk to me.
In his final days, my father would stagger through the house, calling out to my mother. He would converse with shadows as if speaking to her specter. He spoke of a curse.
A curse?
On him. On our family. He insisted it had come back to haunt him. His reckoning. Or something like that.
You cannot possibly believe that.
After what happened to him? To my mother? There is no denying that a dark cloud hangs over my house. I have known it and felt it for some time. Maybe I've always known. I confess that I do not rightly know why I wrote you. In fact, I nearly burned the letter before sending it. But I find myself in the grip of some great, unshakable melancholy, some darkness of mind that, God help me, I simply cannot escape it.
Andrew, I do not pretend to know or even understand what you are going through. But I'm glad that you wrote to me, that you chose to reach out to someone. I cannot stay, but I am here now, and will remain for a time. Perhaps in that time we will break whatever dark spell afflicts your mind, together. But you should know, Andrew, I am engaged to be married.
And I am very happy for you.
I knew, of course, that his words were forced, insincere. Andrew's mind always was an inscrutable thing, but there were cracks in his armor that never properly sealed. More than anything, his disappointment showed. We returned to Ballard Hall and found an old friend waiting there.
Is that Emily Goodwin?
Arthur! Arthur, look at you.
What on earth are you doing here?
Andrew wrote me. He did not tell you?
No, he most certainly did not. This is an unexpected surprise.
We were just about to see what we could pull together for dinner, Arthur. You should stay.
Oh, I don't want to intrude. I just came by to see how you were doing, Andrew.
Nonsense. You are already here, Arthur. Now you must stay. I have 1,000 questions. Arthur Darrow's Andrew's oldest friend. Arthur was a good man. A careful man. I should have listened to him. For a moment, things were as they used to be. The three of us sitting in that old house, talking as old friends.
I have to say, Emily, you have not lost your touch at preparing meals.
You're too kind, Andrew. I had 2 extra pairs of very capable hands to help.
Oh, Emily, do you still bake those... Oh, what
yes,
were they called?
Yes, I remember. Emily, what were those called? They were sort of like biscuits?
Ah, kurabiyesi.
That's the word.
Yes.
Those were from an old recipe my father brought back with him during his visits to Constantinople.
How did you prepare those, anyway?
Simply butter and flour.
Impossible. Those had to be enriched with foreign spices of some sort.
I am sorry to disappoint you both, but you could have been preparing them for yourself all these years.
Perhaps you should bake the good doctor a handful before you depart.
Oh, that's right. Andrew mentioned that I'm not the only one at the table who chose to practice medicine.
Ah, yes, the glamorous life of the country doctor. It is surely the stuff of which great literature shall be written in the years to come.
Oh, Arthur, you have had a number of experiences worth writing about.
Have I?
Do you not remember the first month you returned from medical school?
Not this again.
And Mr. Chambers called you to examine his wife's condition.
What?
She turned out to be perfectly healthy.
I thought he was going to murder you for simply telling him that she did not like his company.
I had to hide out here for a fortnight, and he came looking for me, blaming me for his wife leaving him. Andrew's father had to lie to him just to get him to go away. Told him I'd left town.
Yes. 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 My father. My father.
Andrew. Andrew, what's wrong?
Nothing. I'm fine, really. Just feeling a little unwell all of a sudden. Yeah, it will pass. Please, don't let me get in the way of the conversation.
Oh, nonsense, Andrew. Don't let us run you away from your own table. I have outstayed my welcome anyway. I'll be leaving directly.
Please, stay. Enjoy the evening. I'll be put out at the both of you if you don't. I'm just going to retire early. Emily, you know where the guest room is? Make yourself at home.
Yes, all right, I will. Thank you, Andrew.
I will see you in the morning. Good night, Arthur.
Good night, my friend.
So, how worried should I be about him?
I was the one who examined his father's remains.
And?
My God, Emily. It was like nothing I've ever seen.
Andrew said it was bad.
Bad is an understatement. At first, I suspected other predators had come along and picked at the pieces. But the man simply had not been missing that long. And there were no tracks near the body, no trace of scavengers.
What was the method of death, exactly?
Who's to say? The clothes had been torn, the flesh rent as if by claws and fangs.
Then it had to be some kind of predator, as you say.
In other circumstances, I would be inclined to agree with you. But there have been others.
Andrew said as much.
All over the countryside. At first, they seemed as random as any other animal attack, not terribly frequent and never occurring in any particular pattern. But what ties these deaths together is the sheer and utter ferocity with which the bodies are mutilated.
Could it be more than one predator responsible for the killings? A pack, perhaps? Wolves or a similar species?
I have speculated as much, but that's suggesting an entire pack of animals developing a bloodlust the likes of which I have never seen. I grew up hunting with my father. Usually, predators preserve their meals. There are predictable patterns. None of that here. It's just killing for the sake of killing. I've even gone out hunting myself and never uncovered so much as a track. A pack of wolves would leave some sort of trace, no matter how crafty.
It is a puzzling, troubling mystery.
Yes, and I fear this puzzling, troubling mystery is taking its toll on our friend.
Andrew does seem beset by a dark turn of mind.
Oh, it is much more than that, my dear Emily. He is on the precipice of something far worse than a mere dark turn of mind. I fear Andrew has fallen into the clutches of what the ancient Christians called acedia, a kind of spiritual torpor that has turned him against the very notions of joy and peace.
You have religion now, Arthur?
I have traveled and studied, but the locals here are a damned superstitious bunch.
Yes, Andrew mentioned they have different ideas.
You know as well as I do that we who are of a more scientific persuasion often have the unfortunate duty of dispelling any number of myths and legends regarding what may or may not cure the human body of its ailments.
Of course.
But there are those who still cling to the old ways, who hold fast to their beliefs, at times to the detriment of themselves and others. As such, you and I stand at the crossroads of the past and the future, unraveling the old to make room for the new.
Your point, Arthur, please?
There is an old legend about the Ballard family, a legend that goes back long before their family moved to America. It's a story that the villagers have turned to for an explanation in the wake of John Ballard's death.
What legend, Arthur? What are you talking about?
I'm surprised Andrew never told you. Though, as I suspect, it was not much discussed in this household. As I think about it now, the fact that he never mentioned it isn't so surprising after all. His father worked fervently to dispel such talk among the people.
Speak plainly to me. What superstitions? What legend?
It is an ancient story. At some point in generations past, it was said the Ballard family was placed under a curse from a soothsayer or a witch.
Andrew mentioned something about a curse earlier today. What kind of curse, Arthur?
Lycanthropy. Or so the story goes.
Werewolfism? That old tale? Oh, please. You cannot be serious.
Old tale or not, these are the rumors spreading about with haste. It is this very thing his father went screaming about in the weeks leading up to his death. Though I myself find it difficult to reconcile such things with what I know, I do believe it within the realm of plausibility that a scientific explanation exists.
A scientific explanation? I thought you were Andrew's friend. And here you are speaking of Andrew as if he is somehow biologically predisposed towards madness.
I am his friend, and he mine. But look at his family's history, Emily. First, his mother takes her own life.
Any woman forced to live with a man like his father would surely consider doing the
same. And then look at what happened to his father.
But his father was killed, Arthur. He did not take his own
life.
Yes,
killed because he wandered off into the forest in the dead of night. You were not here, Emily. In the days before his demise, John Ballard was not in his right mind. And now I fear that Andrew is himself falling into the same mental labyrinth as his parents. It is too easy for a man locked away in an old house such as this, which bears so many painful memories, to become lost in the mazes of his own mind.
And you believe him destined to follow his parents to the grave?
You misunderstand. I do not believe Andrew destined to be anything like his parents. However, it is not what you or I believe that makes the difference. It is what Andrew believes. And that, dear Emily, is what frightens me.
So the locals believe it to be Andrew? This monster going around killing people?
So it would seem.
I cannot believe this idiocy.
I fear that Andrew himself is beginning to believe it.
Then we put a stop to it. I will get him out of this house tomorrow. We will go into town and simply be two regular old people milling about. They will see he is no monster.
Andrew has not emerged from this place in a long time.
Believe me, he will not have a choice.
I hope you can do what I could not. The hour grows late. I must be going. I will see you both in town tomorrow, perhaps?
Certainly.
Very well. Emily?
Yes?
I have to tell you that earlier tonight was the happiest I have seen Andrew in a long while. He actually smiled. Your presence here has greatly livened his spirit. Thank you for coming.
Good night, Arthur.
Good night.
If only I had known what was to come. Perhaps I would have cherished more those final hours before the darkness came. Before everything I thought I knew about the world was challenged by powers I, to this day, have yet to understand. Despite all I'd heard, still nothing could have prepared me for what was to come.
The Lost Son, starring Bonnie Bogovich as Emily Goodwin, Curt O'Callaghan as Andrew Ballard, and Josiah Robinson as Arthur Darrows, featuring Georgia Keith as Mrs. Braithwaite, Angelus Gonzalez as Lydia Braithwaite, Andrew Morano as Charles Danforth, and Dave Howell as John Ballard. Audio production by Drew Kessler. produced by Esther Medina and Ethan Goff. Written and directed by Cole Baguette.